legislate a ban on encryption. Going more towards looking for a consensus. But the top lawyer of the intelligence community in the United States, Robert Litt, sent an email to colleagues in August, obtained by the Washington Post, that this legislative environment, which is very hostile today, he says, could turn in the event of a terrorist attack or criminal event where strong encryption could be shown to have hindered law enforcement. There's value, he says, in keeping our options open for such a situation. Unquote. I guess we should all keep our options open. And some news of the godly. A former priest in the United States accused of pedophilia was found to have escaped charges by becoming a high-profile priest and a senior member of staff at a university in Colombia's northern city of Cartagena. Members of the Catholic Church accused of pedophilia in the United States or Europe have been seeking refuge in less developed countries across South America, where they can continue filling senior roles in the church, seemingly innocently. Like Father Fred, who left San Antonio, Texas after being accused of child abuse, is now at the in Cartagena at the University de San Buenaventura, where he holds the position of secretary, the second highest administrative rank, according to the university. In 1987, he was indicted on 2 second-degree felony charges of indecency with a child. He and the Diocese of San Antonio's lawyers threw more than $1 million in cash towards settlement of the case, but the plea bargain was rejected by the judge because she did not believe that Fernandez's priest status should grant him mitigation. Maybe it does. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Soho Radio in London, available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Around the world via the internet at 2 different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcsn.org, and available for as a free podcast from iTunes, SoundCloud, Sideshow Network, and TuneIn, as well as wwno.org. And it'd be just like throwing the micro beads down the micro toilet, as long as they don't get into the micro drains, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Already, thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and a playlist of the music heard here on, and your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, yes, they're at harryshearer.com. And me, thank you for asking. I'm the Harry Shearer at Twitter. It's fun there. It's a fun Twitter. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station for the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from the home of the homeless.
Butte Views and Beyond is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR members and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Friends of the Arts and Grocery Outlet are hosting a wine tasting at the Bidwell Golf Course Bar and Grill tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. All proceeds support Arttoberfest and BCACTV. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by July, the 26th annual Chico Parade of Lights. The theme for this family-friendly event is At the Movies on Saturday, October 17th. This year, the Parade of Lights is also teaming up with Chico Polio. The fun starts at 5:45 p.m. with tricycle races, bed races, wheelchair rugby, the Chico Polio horse race, and the parade begins at 7:30. To submit an entry, information, and sponsorship, visit ChicoParadeOfLights.com. Hi, my name's Deborah Lucero. Welcome to Butte Views and Beyond. This is a show about cultural arts and happenings in the North State. And we have very special in-studio guests today, the Art Officials. And I'm very excited. They're getting ready to do a fundraiser for MONCA, the Museum of Northern California Art. And they are all very accomplished artists, and we are very fortunate to have them with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So, Caitlin, do you want to introduce your crew?
I would. We're a loose art gang of ladies. I'm a painter. Cynthia's also a painter and caustic. Robin is an extreme sculpturer. Susan does beautiful totems, ceramicist, and Chung Hong is a beloved and very well-known painter of East and Western
art influences.
Art influence paintings.
Yes.
And Eve Werner, who's not here, who is doing some beautiful horse paintings, and we wish she could have been here.
Let's first talk about why you're all here today, which is the MONCA fundraising. For those who aren't familiar with what's going on, the Old Veterans Hall, which is on the Esplanade, which has been sitting vacant for as long as I can remember, I think, is going to be occupied by art. And that's the Museum of Northern California. And all of you are working toward that and have developed pieces around a certain theme for this particular event. And so maybe one of you could tell us a little bit about that theme and how that came about.
About, I would say, maybe 6 months ago, I did two paintings in a row that ended up basically white. And they got a really strong response. And we decided to get together, as we usually do, probably once a month. And I was talking about these pieces. And then I said something like, oh, we should do a show about white. And one of us discovered that there was a whole chapter in Moby Dick called The Whiteness of the Whale. And it was, Robin did that. And it was just really profound. And then we really did start to talk about the notion of what came to us. And we all had these really great just inferences. And you can really tell that regardless of what happens, we each really got inspired to expand our work.
So, Caitlin, what inspired you for this particular Art Officials escapade?
Well, we originally were going to do white, and now the title of the show is The Pale and Beyond, which kind of opened up more opportunities of work. I had a beautiful pale white cat named Boris, who was the subject of many of my photographs, and now he's going to be the muse of all of my paintings. The majority of my work is done with sponges. The detail work is done with brush, and I'm kind of a toddler painter. I don't know a lot of history. My main muse or inspiration was Dr. Seuss, and I'm an emotive painter, usually with a lot of color, so this is also a challenge.
I think that's really interesting because, you know, what I know about artists is that it seems that you get in a rhythm and you get used to doing things a certain way, and sometimes it's hard to come up with something new, maybe. But when you get some kind of guidelines that you have to go by or something that forces the creativity, it's amazing what can happen.
Yeah, and it's like we've all been in a relationship and now we're in counseling and finding new ways.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, we'll get back to that. And Cynthia, why don't you talk just a little bit about what encaustic is for audience members who may not even understand what encaustic is?
Encaustic originated in 3 AD when they used wax, hot wax, to cover the bottom of boats. And then somebody thought of carving into the material and adding some kind of stain. There's this famous thing called the Fayum portraits. They're covered, their sarcophagus is covered with these incredible wax paintings that are still perfectly intact, because wax is the greatest adhesive of the world. And if it's kept at a certain temperature, it holds the molecules of color. Nothing fades. So these portraits, which I haven't really seen a live one yet, but I plan to someday, they're perfectly preserved. And then the method was so labor-intensive. You had to heat wax and do all this stuff that it was basically a dead art until the advent of electricity in the, you know, in the probably the 30s. And anyway, so it's just very, it's you use melted wax, pigments, very intense pigments, and you can, the wax becomes a solid and a liquid at the same time. I mean, it's a liquid, then you paint it, it's a solid. But it's fun. Let's just say it's fun. But I like to say I'm a mixed media painter who uses wax, because you can get into a label of encaustic, and then everybody kind of goes in that direction. My paintings use encaustic, but they're more about narrative.
Yeah. Don't fence her in.
Don't fence me in.
So you recently went to New Mexico, and the paintings that you actually created, and you are a prolific painter, if I may say, and you have, what, 11 pieces that you've created for this particular event?
I have, four encaustic pieces that I made. Two started out white, and they were kind of about a story. And as the story evolved, the last two didn't get into the white. And then I have the pieces that you see here, they're paper. They're just mixed media on paper. Those aren't wax. But what happened is I got captivated by the sky. And if anyone's been to New Mexico, you just take one look, and you get this sense of awe that's incomprehensible. And then the weather is so conflicted. And I just got captivated by the sky. I was a resident in Taos for 23 days. So the pieces that I have, they're going to be kind of hanging almost like a laundry line. It's not laundry, but they're going to be hanging from wire so you can see them. And then I'm going to have some more traditional pieces too.
So, Susan, we have in studio one of your totems. I noticed that you often put a bird on top. What kind of birds have you done? This one looks like...
This is a white dove. The symbol for the white dove is peace. And I feel like that's a good thing to bring more into the world and into myself. And nature is always a theme for me. So I often have natural themes. Yeah.
And how long have you been doing ceramics? Were you trained as a ceramicist?
No. I started teaching at Bidwell Junior High, and I was to teach a ceramics class for the junior high students, and so that's when I started. And I gradually, so it was this long, long process of learning about clay, different kinds of clay, and so I feel like a toddler in the clay the clay department too, because I never mixed glazes. I didn't come through studying
on the job training.
Yeah, on the job training. And and actually, when I also really dove into ceramics when I was pregnant with my first child, because I started meeting with an art group, and I just started creating art that related to mothering. So, with clay. So I really dove in there. Yeah. And now I just like to make these spheres. I love making spheres, and I love working with lots of different textures. And I'm a rock person, so they kind of have a feeling of rocks too.
And do you impress upon the different things, or do you carve?
I have a couple. My leaf stamp. That's the only one that I have that's actually that I don't carve. Yeah. But the rest, all of them are individually made, and there's no, I have no molds. I just make pinch pots, and I put them together, and I.
So, freehand.
Yeah, all freehand.
Nice. And this is maybe leaning toward the pail.
Actually, when they're all ceramic, but when they are bisque fired, which is the first firing, they are really white. And when they're fired unglazed, when they're fired with to the next firing, they turn that kind of off-white color. So, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. Now, had you done much of this where it looked like this? So was this something you discovered through this process of the white concept?
Yes. Usually my work is all about color and texture. And it's. But we decided to do this event. And my husband and I traveled through Spain and Portugal this summer. And we went to the Alhambra, which is in Granada in the south of Spain, and there was a palace, and the walls there are carved with all these intricate patterns by the Moors that settled there, and it was remarkable, and I was very inspired by the intricacy of the work that went into hundreds of years of work.
You're listening to Butte Views and Beyond, and I'm your host, Deborah Lucero. We'll be right back after this brief musical interlude with Delbert Bump and the B3 Trio. Delbert Bump will be playing at the Salmon Festival this weekend in Oroville. Views and Beyond. I'm your host, Deborah Lucero, and we're in studio with five amazing artists, Caitlin Sherwin, Cynthia Schildhauer, Robin Indar, Susan Kirk, and Chunhong Chung. Welcome back.
Chunhong, I wanted to turn our attention just briefly to you, because I know you have collectors all over the country.
I'm very grateful.
You know,
as a lot of people love my work. It's a fortunate as an artist I could survive, just do what I love.
I've been a fan for many years, and actually have two beautiful pieces in my home of your work. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you first came on the scene, what you did was so different than what anybody had really seen. The idea of putting almost framing. Something that we all see in art, kind of traditional art, with this beautiful oriental touch. And the colors you use are just amazing. So tell us a little about yourself.
I was a teacher, a public teacher in Taiwan. Then I had my own art school as well. And I worked 14 hours a day in Taiwan. And I thought, you know, I need a break. I came here for my MA, and I met my husband. And I realized all my life, all I want to do is just creating art. So I stayed 18 years ago and just be an artist and until now.
And that's what you do full time.
You know, it's not making any money, but, you know, surviving. The reason I do the Incongruent Theory, which in the past almost 10 years, so what I've been doing is combine the classical oriental painting outside the frame, which is bring from the Tang and Song Dynasty in the, China. But I would say the most of it is in East Asia's type of the flavors in there. Mm-hmm. Then in the center, I put in the classical European still life. For me, it has so much richness in there from the East and the West, especially from classical painting. Mm-hmm. And I like that the agents. Before this series, I was working on in my thesis, I was working on the religion icons comparison, mm-hmm. which if you look at the back in the era, a lot of painting has this Krakow, the agents, and you feel the spirits there. And so I bring all this in my work, which is from me, and that is the reason make it special and different, because nobody's so crazy and put two two culture together and two painting together.
But that's your whole life.
That's all my life. That's reflecting who I am and what's my experience, and that's how I see the world as well. You know, because I see the world is in one. We are on this earth. We are come from the same source, and I don't see the differences. But we can bring all our beauty, coexist in harmony and beauty. And that's the main thing in my painting. I want to bring this in there. And I'm hoping the people can re-see that in my work. And of course, it's a challenge doing the why and the beyond.
But you know, it's interesting. I'm beginning to see a theme, you know, emerge in the pale and beyond. It seems that sense of finding, stretching yourselves as artists to enter into that piece, because white is hard. It's difficult.
I would say in the process of learning the painting, the white, the black, and the transparent. It's the three things, I think, the most difficult things.
And you chose stones to put into the center of this particular piece.
Yeah, stone has some sort of symbolism for me. It's talking about eternity. The why is some spiritual energies. So it's kind of cohesive what I'm searching for in my life. And I would say it's a more spiritual experience.
I think what you just said, Chen Hong, is really great, and I liked what Robin said too, because whiteness doesn't necessarily mean purity or happiness, but it for me, it ended up being kind of a cleansing. So how this started for me, how powerful it was I had this, my second one, it had a bunch of white wax kind of dripping on there, and it looked really beautiful, but when someone looked at it, they said it looks like white blood. And I thought that was really what I was going for, is the notion of white blood. Huh? What's that about? Well, it's about healing, but it's not about not pain. But it had the... So sometimes when you go through some kind of experience, just allowing yourself to feel your feelings is the whiteness. Because a lot of people, it's hard to really feel what you feel. There's all these excuses in our world to take a pill or to jog or to go on a diet or whatever it is, just so you can be okay, rather than to just sit there and feel the blood, the white blood, which is healing. Mm-hmm. But it didn't mean it was happy necessarily. It's hard to describe, and I really was relating to Chen Hong, and that's what I was thinking. So that's kind of how it started for me, is this notion of white blood. But I thought it was kind of morbid or perverted to say it's white blood, so I never said it, and now I'm saying in public.
And I truly wish that Eve could have joined us today. Her work is just beautiful.
As is she.
Yes.
From the pictures that she brought to our last meeting, they were on her phone. I know they're like 40 by 40.
That's huge.
Immense. And the majority is white landscape. Wild horses, but they're against the light, so they're dark. They're like shadows of horses.
But she's fascinating.
So she said there's not one drop of pure white on her painting, and it's gigantic. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she did.
That's going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. That really is going to be.
Robin, why don't you tell us a little bit about the beautiful sphere that you brought in to share with us today, which is amazing, and what, you know, what goes into something like that?
Yep, I've explored a lot of different substrates that you can mosaic onto, and I came across this garden sphere. It's a polyfibercrete hollow sphere. And I like to go really big with my stuff, depending on how much time I have to work on it. But I like to hand make my tiles and get into texture. And
how was it working with white? Because you're very colorful.
Yes, I was initially very frustrated that white for me has always been a tricky one. I don't usually wear a lot of white. I don't work in white, but it was neat to try something new, and I think it kind of looks like a cloud, what I ended up making. So
that's a nice idea. And then expound a little bit on the Moby Dick chapter and how that inspired you.
What I like about it is that he starts out talking about all the purity and all this positive stuff about white. And then he says, but there's more to it. And then he gets into, you know, how it could be death. It could be sickness. It can be, you know. And so I like that he covered all of it.
It wasn't just the stereotypical white that we might think of.
Yeah, like look at it from all angles, which is, I think, the best approach.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your public art. You have several pieces of public art on display throughout California. I don't know if you're in other parts of the United States, but I do know you're in several cities in California.
I have a piece in Colorado and a piece in Arizona, but yeah, most of them are in California.
And when did you get your first piece of public art?
My first public art piece was actually a community art project for 20th Street Park in Chico. And community art has its own set of problems because you have a wide range of ability. And so we had toddlers and anyone walking through the park, senior citizens, their hands could, you know, were shaking, and I was teaching them how to smash tile and put them in the design, and the designs were intricate. But that was the first project. And then my first, like, solo public art project was the Jackson Pollock bench.
One of my favorites.
Also in Chico.
Love that.
And yeah, once you get a little bit in your portfolio, then you can start applying to other things. So then I did the Caper Acres Sea Serpent. And in 2013, I did my largest mural, which is in Sacramento on 16th and O. And it's a three-story lizard on a five-story building.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've seen that one. So do any of you have any other public art out there?
I'm in the Encaustic Institute Gallery in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which was my big career. Woohoo!
Yes, which and is very, that's to be celebrated. That's a big
you.
Deal.
Thank you. And I'm in the Mendocino Art Center Gallery, and I'm in a Native American gallery in Nevada City called Vigil, Lily Vigil. And I am also planning probably to have an open studio during Artoberfest. I'm not in the advertising. I was out of town, so I have to market, hint, hint, right now.
Well, we'll talk about Artoberfest, because yeah, I think so you are all on, are you all on tour?
Yeah.
The Art Officials, they are dynamite women and incredible artists, and I'm pleased that they decided to join us today on Butte Views and Beyond. Thank you again. My name's Deborah Lucero. And
coming up next is Ray Lager, who's going to talk to a few people about the upcoming Salmon Festival this weekend. Stay tuned. It's fall. Thank you. Autumn, and what better way to celebrate than Artoberfest? From the swish of dancers' dresses to the strumming of guitars, Artoberfest celebrates the National Arts and Humanities Month all 31 days of October. And if you can believe it, we're in our 10th year. This festival, an eclectic mixture of the Chico region, has exploded since 2005, its events growing in number from 85 to 150 at its height. The festival features concerts and live performances, literature, poetry, dance, film and video, visual arts, music, theater, architecture, special events. Then there's always the highlights, like the Open Studios Tour, which is just phenomenal to go on, the Sierra Oral Farm Trail, the U.S. National Yo-Yo Contest, Oktoberfest, and Glassfest. Chico Performances always puts on spectacular events. 1078 Gallery, the Children's Choir of Chico, the Janet Turner Print Museum, Chico Cabaret, Chico Experience Week, and more. And don't forget Chico Palio. Chico Palio is going to change up just a little bit this year and join the Parade of Lights on Saturday, October 17th in downtown Chico. Fall means Artoberfest. If you want to learn more, go to artoberfest.net. That's A-R-T, Art, O-B-E-R, Fest.net. You won't believe what's listed there. Go there right now and check out what your next event's going to be in October. Have fun this fall. Thank you.
All right, I'm here with Larry Gendreau from the Optimist Club in Oroville, and for the Salmon Festival, you guys do actually grilling salmon from the Feather River.
Yes, it's the only place on earth that you can buy a fillet of Feather River salmon. It's the Oroville and Chico Optimist Club are partnering to put this booth together. We've done it for the past 10 years. Last year, we sold about 500 pounds of salmon fillets, and we're hoping to do the same this year. The salmon is marinated in our wonderful Resurrection marinade that brings it back. We serve the salmon with potato salad and black beans. It's a beautiful dinner and a wonderful way to enjoy the festival.
Yeah, it's amazing. So the fish are being filleted a day before, a couple days before, coming right out of the river?
Right. It's the most sustainable salmon that you'll ever eat. Comes right from the hatchery. They've completed their mission, and now their only task left is to feed you.
That's right. These are Oroville salmon coming right out of the Feather River. And they've had a long journey. They came from somewhere in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
To return home as the mighty Chinook salmon return.
It's amazing that they can find their way back.
Yeah, it really is year after year. And the Optimist Club, this is a fundraiser for you guys?
This is our main fundraiser. The Optimist Clubs, both in Oroville and Chico, are friends to youth and engender respect for law in their communities. They work every day in the community, and this is an opportunity for us to raise the funds we need to do our good work.
And some of that work is scholarship programs and youth programs?
That's right. We have essay and oratory contests every year and provide scholarships for the winners. We have we send kids to summer camp, facilitate at-risk kids in going to summer camp each year. We work with other groups who support kids, Boys and Girls Clubs, Tech Trek. So we just fill our year with activities to be a friend to youth and engender respect for law in the community.
That's great. And wasn't a couple years ago, wasn't one of the national champions from Oroville in the essay contest?
Yeah, it got pretty exciting. It wasn't a national champion, but we did provide the district champion. A young woman won a $2,500 scholarship, and right now she's at Brigham Young University spending that money.
All right. Well, I'm sure they'll find places for that to happen. So again, the Optimist Club is going to be at Salmon Court during the Salmon Festival, and that is going to be located on beautiful Arlen Ryan Memorial Drive, which is the road that is overlooking the levee onto the Feather River. There is a free shuttle service. You can get off at the Oliver Street. There'll be a bus stop at Oliver and Montgomery coming from the hatchery, or you can be coming from Riverbend Park, and that'll take you right up onto the levee. And you can't miss it, big white tents. You'll see Larry and his crew there grilling away.
Yeah. Look for the smoke underneath of the Dedalo pines.
There you go. And there's a lot of great great fish. Thanks, Larry, and thank you guys for doing it. How many years have you been in the Optimist Club?
I've been in the Optimist Club for about 20 years, but we've been doing the festival since 2004.
Excellent. All righty. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Okay. Thank you, Ray.
Bob Marciniak with the City of Oroville, and he is the program specialist, and you are kind of everything events in Oroville. That's how I know you.
Well, thank you, Ray. I like to think of myself that way. I do the public relations for the city of Oroville, and the city has had the pleasure of being involved in the Salmon Festival right from the beginning 21 years ago. The exciting thing about all this is that we have seen the festival grow immensely in the last 5 years. There's something for everyone of every age to do, and it's a little bit scattered through the historic downtown district, over to the fish hatchery along the river. But the exciting thing is that there are free shuttle buses that'll take you from point A to B, or you can walk, because the Chamber of Commerce has assured us that the weather will be in the mid to low 80s this Saturday.
Yeah, it should be perfect weather. Last year, with the fish hatchery and DWR and the city instigating the salmon trail, we call it, you can walk from the hatchery across the Green Bridge right along the Feather River right to the Salmon Festival, to Salmon Court. It's a beautiful It's about a 6-minute walk, and you can watch the fish jump and spawn, and it's all really happening right there. I wanted to get a little back history, though, on the Salmon Festival. 21 years ago, Frieda Flint, was that true?
Frieda Flint, who is a longtime resident in the city of Oroville. At the time, she was working at the Chamber of Commerce as an administrative person, and one day said, you know, we really need to appreciate and celebrate the salmon, because that is one of the things that Oroville is famous for. And so she began a very small festival that was held at the Municipal Auditorium, mostly artwork, a few booths, but it just began to pick up momentum, and especially in the last 4 years, it has just kind of not gone over the top, but there's always room. We have thousands of people come. We have people come from all over the Northern California area, Southern California, and other places.
Yeah, points beyond. Yeah, it really is. I mean, this is one of the last wild Chinook runs in the North State, for sure, probably statewide. And it's been happening since, I don't know, since salmon began.
Right.
You know, this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
It's a real honor to have this. And a lot of people don't even realize it. I mean, you know, countywide, people just don't really stop and think about it. The Feather River runs right through historic downtown Oroville. I often see people fly fishing when I drive over the bridge on Highway 70. I purposely glance at the river every time I cross it. It's so beautiful.
And this year, there's an absolutely additional great feature at it. There's going to be kayaks in the river.
Exactly.
And you may hear about that later in the broadcast, but it's an incredible thing that shows people that the river is alive, it's well, it's flowing. I was in it personally a couple weeks ago, literally, as I fell out of a kayak, but nothing to be afraid of. It was a refreshing splash. The good thing about our festival, the Salmon Festival, as I said earlier, is that there is something for everybody, and everyone from any age can enjoy it. There's fantastic music, there's good food, there's beverages, there's artwork, you name it, it's here. It's hundreds of pieces all coming together over a one-year planning process.
Yeah, it really is. Let's give a little recap, Bob. So we're starting off at 9 o'clock. There's fish hatchery tours, and that's over across the river. Those are free. And the other thing is, there's free parking, free shuttles, and free admission. So this is a great way to bring the family out, bring everybody out. Of course, if you want to purchase things, we'd love to have you do that, but you don't necessarily have to.
Right. There's actually a pancake breakfast at the hatchery this year.
Starting at 9 o'clock.
Right. So you could, you know, begin with pancakes, slide into smoked salmon, have a beverage, enjoy a salmon meal.
You can even
hamburgers,
buy
all the things that you like to eat.
Yeah, you can even buy smoked salmon to go, so which I usually have Sunday morning after the event, or Sunday later, you know, some great smoked salmon.
So, when you have your feet up.
Yeah, when I put my feet up. So 9 o'clock, fish hatchery tours start. At 9:30 is the color dash, the salmon color run. That's Oroville Hospital putting that on. Registration for that starts at 8:30, and you can pre-register if you go to salmonfestoroville.org website. Everything's linked up on there. We'll talk about the kayaking. Kayak rides start at 8:30. And then at 10 o'clock, the street fair opens. Salmon court opens. There's going to be native dancing from the Concow Valley Maidu tribe is going to be doing opening ceremony and native dancing at 10 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, the Feather River Parks and Recs Department does a recital. And at noon, we start with our nonstop entertainment. Jesse Naomi, fabulous singer-songwriter, is going to be performing. Also, the Miami Road Roosters, which are kind of like Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Chicago-style, big band rock, jazz and rock. We also have Kazira, and she does kind of pop soul. And then Delbert Bump Trio, who was at the NorCal Jazz Festival this year, he'll be performing. He is a native of Oroville. He was graduated from Oroville High School in class of 63, so this is a little homecoming for Delbert. And then we finished the show with Oroville's own Inside Straight country rock band, so it should be a fun day. The Family Fun Day, which we didn't talk about, is a free event at the Butte County Office of Education.
which is in the historic downtown area.
That is on Robinson and Huntoon?
Huntoon.
Robinson and Huntoon. And that's really great kids' entertainment, family fun, no charge. Great. If you got a pack of kids, that's a great place to take them.
Right.
They'll really enjoy that. And, of course, the street fair will be going on throughout the historic downtown, and that's done by the Downtown Business Association, Oroville Downtown Business Association. And then, of course, we have the Oroville Hospital Health Fair at Salmon Court, which does health screenings and flu shots if the state delivers them. And, again, another great element to the event. All righty. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. And we look forward to seeing all of you this Saturday at the 21st Annual Salmon Festival in beautiful, historic Oroville.
And for more information, go to salmonfestoroville.org and also check us out on Facebook and give us a like. All right, my next guest is Tony Cantilano, and he is the program director for the Forbay Aquatic Center. And we're really excited about having them involved in the Salmon Festival this year, as they are going to be providing kayak rentals on the Feather River.
Yes. That's correct. We are going to be offering rides, kayak paddles down the Feather, starting at the Fish Hatchery and ending at Riverbend Park, four times during the day on Saturday. First one is at 8:30, next one's at 11, next one's at 1:30, and then the final one is at 4. And the paddle takes about an hour and a half, and there'll be free transportation from the Salmon Court to the Fish Hatchery, and then back from Riverbend Park back up to the Salmon Court. So yeah, People can park their cars and walk around the Salmon Court and around downtown and catch a bus to the ride and back home again.
Yeah, and if you're coming in and if you're parking at Riverbend Park, you can even, you know, for your return trip, you can do the float and come back to your car
and
leave from there.
Your car. Exactly.
So you can work out those logistics.
Right.
The river is beautiful. It is a little low. So, you know, I've talked to people. I said, well, I can't swim. Well, to be honest with you, that's not really an issue, because if you can stand up, you'll be fine.
If you can stand up, you'll be fine in most places. We provide personal flotation devices, the kayak, the paddle. You can bring your own water and sunscreen if you desire. Our trips will be led by, two of them will be led by Dan Efsef, who's a certified riparian ecologist. And he'll lead our first two morning trips. And then we'll have Alan Seeley, who's one of our staff, will lead the last two trips. And they'll stop along the way and talk a little bit about the wildlife and natural history along the river and the salmon and other things that come up. And, it'll be a nice little ride.
Yeah, you guys were kind enough to provide some of the committee members with a exploration float a couple of weeks ago. We got to kind of sample it, and not only did we see literally salmon jumping out next to us in our kayaks, we saw blue heron, saw egrets, saw some trout, turtles. It's really remarkable.
It's really a beautiful stretch of the river. It's really nice, and if you haven't been on it, we invite you to come on down and try. It's really nice. It's easy. Paddling is easy. Their boats are safe. They're ocean-going kayaks, so they're wide. And the river's like Ray said. The river's a little low, so it's not flowing real fast. So it'll be really nice.
And these are going to be two-person boats?
These are two-person boats. Yes, they are.
Yeah,
we're limiting it to 12 to 15 people per paddle.
Okay, and if you'd like to register for that, you can go to the salmonfestoroville.org website. Mm-hmm. You'll see a link right on the cover page to kayak. Just give it a click, and you can sign up right there. There is a fee to participate, but it's extremely reasonable. And again, free transportation to and from, so you really can't be beat. And again, you could be cruising by while the festival is happening, you catch a little of the music, come on back, and come back and have some food. I wanted to get a little background also with the Aquatic Center. I know it's gone through some changes. It used to be associated with Chico State a few years ago. Why don't you give us a little background on that?
Sure. About 4 years ago, Dr. Mike Seeley, a local veterinarian, took over the Forbay Aquatic Center from Chico State University, which was disbanding it. And Mike is a rower. And one of his goals, he organized the Feather River Rowing Club, and one of the goals is to make the Forbay into a place where collegiate and master's rowers can come up for competitions. We also rent equipment, aquatic equipment, kayaks, canoes, stand-up paddle boards, pedal boats, etc., for families and individuals. All summer, our season generally runs from starts at Memorial Day. This year, we're having a grand finale on Sunday, September 27th. We're going to have Gypsy Rose Gourmet Catering there, providing hamburgers, selling real gourmet burgers from Chico State Farms, and we're going to be having specials on our rentals. During the rest of the school, after the season closes for the summer, we work with Outdoor Education for All, a local group of volunteers dedicated to connecting schools and outdoor education providers so more kids could get science education outdoors. And we're connecting with them to provide some Outdoor Education for All opportunities for our students in Butte County.
Excellent. And you guys, website, good place for people to find out about this?
The website's a really good place, www.4bayaquaticcenter.com. You can get all the information you need. You can send us emails. I respond to all the emails. If you're interested in a reunion or a business meeting or a team building or a retirement party or whatever, we can accommodate you. And we can get on the water or not, depending on the weather.
That sounds great. I mean, it's, you know, I realize, yeah, we're heading, I think today is the first day of fall,
yes.
But you know, you drive past the Four Bay, it's beautiful to be paddleboarding out there. It's really nice. Now, are you guys going to remain open on weekends, or is this the last month?
No, this is the last, this upcoming weekend's the last weekend. The 26th, we'll be open from noon to 6, and we're open again for our grand finale on Sunday, the 27th, also from noon to 6.
And then when do you open for the 2016 season?
We'll open for the 2016 season on Memorial Day of 2016. One more thing, though. This weekend, Sunday night, is our full moon paddle. We'll be shoving off around 6 p.m. And this moon, at the end of September, is a super moon, and there will also be an eclipse during the moon. So it's a very special one to come out and see. And we have registration for that on our website. We try to limit that to about 25 people. So sign up if you haven't yet. That's going to be really super.
Where do you launch from?
We launch from the Four Bay Aquatic Center, and you come in at Garden Drive and Highway 70. It's part of the Lake Oroville State Recreation Area. We are part of California State Parks, and there's a $6 fee, entrance fee to get into the park, and then we have a small fee to rent a boat and have a guided moonlight paddle. It's really nice.
And you paddle around the Four Bay?
We paddle out to the bridge by sunset. And then we turn around, and the moon is rising above the hills. Again, it'll be a super moon. It'll be huge and red. And then we'll get the eclipse on our way back. So it'll be a really special event.
Okay, what time does that start? I want to do that.
That'll start. We're going to shove off at about 6. So get there early. Get there around 5:30 or so we can get you fitted for your life jacket and get you in a boat and everything.
And is it going to be kayaks, canoes, both?
It'll be kayaks and canoes. People can bring their own craft also and paddle at a lower rate.
And how long a adventure is this?
This usually takes a couple hours. You should figure a couple hours, maybe two and a half.
All righty.
Yeah, hey. Be great. See you out there.
All righty. Thanks. Tony Catalano from Four Bay Aquatic Center. And your website one more time?
www.4bayaquaticcenter.com.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you, Ray. Talk to you later.
All right. I am here with Becky Smith and Susan Gilbert, and they are with the Feather River Nature Center and Native Plant Park, and they are docents with the park, and we're going to talk about a really special event that's coming up on Friday night, September 25th, tomorrow night, and that is the Feather River Nature Center Dinner and Dance at Salmon Court as kind of a kickoff for Salmon Festival. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, it's totally a kickoff, Ray, and thank you for having us here. We're looking forward to something we've been doing for the last 20-some years down there at the first city park of Oroville, which we turned into the museum and then the native plant park. And we raised money along with the city to help improve the trails for those who like to come down and walk along safely the river. So we will be there from 6. We start at 6 o'clock up on the levee Friday night, the 25th, And we have a no-host beer and wine bar. We have some very fine donated raffle prizes from the casino. Feather Falls Casino has donated a very handsome gift. We have others that have been put together with the local businesses. So dinner will start at 7, and then we have music along at dinner time with the Crawlers, and the Charlie Robinson Trio will be there during dinner. So there's lots of music and fun camaraderie with those that attend. After dinner, there's some dancing on a really fine dance floor, and it's just fun to get out and enjoy the fact that we have this in our very own front yards.
And it's in a beautiful location. It's literally overlooking the Feather River. It's done outdoors. We close off Arlen Rhine Drive, which runs along the levee. We have some big white tents. It's really an elegant evening. It's white linen tablecloths. Actually, they're going to be cream-colored tablecloths this year, a little more elegant. Yes. And nice twinkly lights. Our past Chamber of Commerce President, Claudia Knaus, insisted on twinkly lights, so we have twinkly lights. And great music from the Crawlers. They'll be playing during dinner time. And then the living legend himself, Charlie Robinson, a Cherokee favorite, will be playing some jazz dance music with his trio from 8 till 9. And it's actually Alaskan salmon. It's being catered by Sherry. Catering by Sherry, a local caterer, does a fabulous job. And it's either Alaskan salmon or tri-tip, your choice. And you can get tickets, again, at salmonfestoroville.org. But don't delay, because it's a kind of a limited thing. And, of course, we have to have it up in advance. We usually get somewhere about 250 people. There's free parking right up there on the levee. It's well lit. It's paved. It's safe. In the past, in years past, this event was held at the Nature Center. It got to be a little bit of a strain on the organization. It got to be a little too big. So we made the move last year. And although the Nature Center is a very beautiful place, and we urge people to go down there on Saturday during the Salmon Festival and check it out, this new location, I think, is going to work well. And it's just a little more accessible. It is wheelchair accessible. If you have people that that need that assistance, you can drive right up to the event, drop them off, and we'll be happy to take care of them. I wanted to ask you, though, a little bit quick history about the Nature Center Park itself. Was that a bridge at one time, or was that a...
It was a cable ferry across, which turned out to be the Native American ceremonial grounds. It was called the parking lot, and people went across to the Thermalito side, the northern side, north side of the river, with a cable ferry, and then the bridge went in, making it more accessible. But the park actually was a first city park, and it was used as a changing station for the men and women of town to come down and get into their swimming gear in the 1935, and swim, then clean up and shower off and go back to downtown. But in 37, a huge flood came through, washed out all the sand around the huge volcanic boulders. Very dangerous swimming, so they moved it on down to the Bedrock Park area in 1937. And this lay fallow until the building did, all washed out, no roof, no windows, no nothing, and the pathways were damaged with the water flows that came through. So in 1996, neighbors got together and put monies and volunteer work from the businesses in town and rebuilt everything for a safe safely to come and visit the center. And we put a museum inside with the flora, the fauna, and the fish, and the Native American, the Maidu, many, many relics from the Maidu collections that have been donated.
And that's going to be, the museum will be open during Salmon Festival?
Yes, during from 12 to 4 on Saturdays and Sundays. And we, when it gets too cold, we close up shop and wait for the springtime in April.
All righty. And you guys are usually open. Is it open on weekends, most weekends? Or
All weekends. The park is open all the time.
Yeah, park. The museum.
Yes, go down from the roundabout and park down there and have a lovely walks along the Sewimbo Trail.